Welcome to Aspects of Riding with your host, James Kelly. For the next 60 minutes, we'll explore every aspect of riding, including how to create, format, and even sell your work. Now, let's get writing. Here's your host, James Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Aspects of Riding. I'm your host, James Kelly, and my co-host for today's show is Cynthia Lee DeBoer, and our guest is Temple Kenyon. Temple, you're from Idaho. You grew up in small town America, and you just recently released a book called The Button Boxes. So why don't you tell us a little more about who you are, and then we'll go into about your book.
Okay, thanks for having me today. And Cynthia, thanks for joining us. I'm originally from Idaho, as you said. I grew up on a wheat farm. My parents do like wheat, barley, peas, lentils, that kind of stuff. And then their parents were farmers too. No animals, just agriculture as far as grains and stuff. And I grew up in a real small town and went to school at the University of Idaho and basically just spent the first 3 decades in Idaho loving life and not really knowing anything other than that wonderful area. And my husband got a job in Las Vegas. So we thought, what the heck, let's try to add a new chapter to our life story. And he is a paper maker for Clearwater Paper. So that's kind of fun. It was originally a business that started where I grew up in Potlatch, Idaho. It was a lumber company and then evolved into paper making and stuff. So that's how we ended up in Las Vegas. And we've been here for, it'll be 17 years, end of this month in May. And we love it. We've had great opportunities, like right here, right now. This is a great opportunity for me as a writer. We'll probably retire in Idaho, but I think we have grown very fond of this area. So we might be like the snowbird.
Okay.
So, yeah.
What prompted you to write your book?
I have always been someone who loves the written word. And so I wrote stories when I was a kid and wrote letters to my grandma. That was always a big deal because she'd write back. And I just always felt that was a very comfortable place for me to be, is with, you know, a computer or a pen and paper. I have had great jobs where I use writing as, you know, part of a job, like event planning. I work for a hotel. I worked in real estate. So I've always kind of had that marketing and communication PR piece to it where I can write. But creatively, I didn't really catch the bug or maybe realize I could have, or that I could actually write a book until maybe 10 years ago. It kind of started itching that I needed to be doing this sort of as a, I started out as a side gig, as a lot of writers do, because I had to have a day job. But my mother-in-law and I were talking one day in her sewing room. She's a big quilter, and my family actually are big seamstresses, quilters, tailors, whatever you want to call them, not as a business, but just they've always made their own clothes and quilts and stuff. And we were talking about how buttons could have stories. You know, if you have clothes on that have buttons, the buttons see what you see. They live what you live because they're right there as a witness. And even though it's an inanimate object, it was sort of a fun thing to talk about how they would have stories. And so that storyline just stuck with me. And it wasn't really originally supposed to be a book necessarily, but I just couldn't shut that inner voice down. I just had to write it down. It turned into a big story, and I just got excited about it and thought, this could be a book. And so that was the goal, and it is now a book.
Right. Why did you decide to self-publish?
Well, the self-publish came after trying to pursue the traditional publishing route. And, you know, I sent too many queries that got rejections that I won't admit how many, but there were a lot. And I knew that going in, that it was a, maybe not a long shot, but it wasn't a sure thing. And, you know, anybody that's ever gotten a rejection letter, I'm sure they automatically go to, well, it's not good enough, or it's not what people are buying right now. And so my mind went there. It wasn't good enough. And I got pretty frustrated, disappointed, you know, defeated kind of feeling. And so I liken my book to like a naughty little toddler, that it didn't get me an agent. So I put it in the corner, told it to think about what it had done, and that I would get back to it later. And it sat for a few months, and I had a great conversation with a friend of mine who is also a very creative fellow. And he said, you just need to go through why you don't think this is why it didn't get accepted, or you didn't catch an agent. And so he kind of worked me through that process. And anyway, long story short, he said, there's your answer. So you need to self-publish this book. And he'd read it, and his kids had read it, and I'd had several beta readers. And everyone was like, you got to get this in book form. You got to do this. So my friend was like, what have you got to lose really at this point? Even if just your friends or your family buy it, you know, it's a precious story, as he said. And so that's why I took that route. And the more that I learn about the self-publishing process and the people who have also gone down the self-publishing path, I am so thrilled that I went ahead and did it, because I've learned a great deal and I've met some amazing people that will share their story with me, and I can learn even more from them, from their self-publishing journey. So I just really am glad I went ahead and got my book out of the corner and told it wasn't naughty anymore and put it to a cover. So yeah.
Well, I want to let everyone know that we're actually in quarantine, just like everyone else in America. So we're doing this on Zoom. So the listening audience, just so you know, there isn't a video portion that'll be on YouTube on Aspects of Writing, or just go to James Kelly on YouTube and you'll see the video portion with three squares with our faces in it, hopefully. But yeah, you know, everyone's doing what they have to do until this pandemic passes. Yeah. So I want to ask you some further questions about your book. I want to know, how many books have you written? Because I know you have the new one, you know, the button boxes, but didn't you write a couple others?
No, I've just, the button boxes is my first book. I've had the pleasure of writing for a few magazines. Locally, I've written for the Boulevards magazine, and some of that work can be seen out online and whatnot, but it's just articles about mostly what's not necessarily on the strip. It's sort of the off the beaten path, things that people can do when they're in Vegas, or a lot of it centered around like kids and school projects and stuff like that. Just cool things going on in the Valley. And right now I write for a regional magazine called Home and Harvest. It's published out of Moscow, Idaho, which is the area where I grew up and lived for many years. And I have pretty much a lot of freedom with that. She doesn't limit what her writers write. She just trusts that we know what we want to write for that particular issue. And so I've done some fiction and creative nonfiction. And so that has been a real sort of the oil to the machine for my brain, because it's every other month and it gives me time to write. There will be another book. I know there'll be a second book to the button boxes, at least a second one, but I'm kind of in that process where I'm still percolating along, trying to decide where it's going to start. And is that the last book of the series, or will there be more? So where would it end? You know, all those questions still need to be answered in my head, but I'm working on it. And my dad's memoir too, of being a North Idaho farmer. So yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the button boxes.
Well, my wonderful illustrator, Julian Ewert, shout out to her. The button boxes, like I said, it came out of an idea that my mother-in-law and I talked about buttons having stories. And she had sort of envisioned it as like a historical fiction with a girl who was a tailor or a seamstress. But I felt I needed it to be a little bit more current. So it starts in 2004. And that is just to so that I can fit in the family tree, because it goes all the way back to pre-Civil War times. And the family tree is important, so I had to make sure I had the generations in certain years to have it work out where I had some important characters in the Civil War time. So basically, Andy, who is our star, our main character, he's 12, and he's a total football buff and plays video games and loves hanging out with his friends, and he's a pretty good student, other than history seems to trip him up a little. And his grandma Lois gives him a couple of wooden boxes full of old buttons for his birthday, his 12th birthday. And their family has had a tailoring business since the Civil War times. And so he thinks, oh, she's trying to get me into being a tailor by giving me these buttons, and she doesn't want me to play football. And he's just that typical kind of resistant kid, maybe not rebellious, but just sort of resisting anybody suggesting that he do anything other than play football when he's an adult. And she tells him that these buttons are special, and that if he sleeps with them, there's two special buttons that are from the Civil War times, that if he sleeps with them, each button has a story to tell him about his family history. And he thinks she's crazy. You know, why would I sleep with buttons? But he finds out throughout the story that these buttons do have stories to tell, and they hold enough power or magic that when his grandma falls ill, he realizes that they are going to be the thing that holds the answers to saving her and keep getting her out of the hospital. So, yeah.
This book is available on 1 million books and 100days.com, which is how you came to me through Cynthia, in that you're now a participant with that program. Cynthia, let's talk about that for a few minutes, because I know you know a lot about it. Where should we start with this, Cynthia?
As you know, you are the creator of this. And when this all began, it was such a major opportunity for indie authors to be able to have more exposure. And for me, the really big draw, besides the exposure, was the fact that it is charity driven. And I think that that's really important. Nowadays, with everybody on their phones or iPads or whatever, you know, picking up a book, especially for young people, is just something that unfortunately has gotten lost on the wayside. And I think, you know, getting a physical book, and believe me, I am totally for, you know, all the online books, the ebooks, audiobooks, all of that. But, you know, for children, I think having a book that they can read and treasure and hold on to, and even perhaps pass on, or at least, you know, save some of the things that they've learned in them, is really, really important. And you've been doing some amazing advertising for us. You've been doing billboards across the country. You have us on anything and everything that you can think of. And, you know, it's just an honor to be in such a group. We have such a diverse group of authors in so many genres. It's just amazing. We're not going to get lost in the shuffle as if you would go to some of the big, you know, the big bookstores or the big, you know, websites, you know, like Amazon or BNN or any of those, because it's a smaller group of people with, like I said, a variety of genres. So everybody can find something. And in the process, they get to donate to wonderful charities. So.
Yeah. And that was my intent, was I wanted to elevate. It's exactly what you said, Temple. When you send out query letters, you know, you have to realize that these publishers receive thousands of queries every day.
Yeah.
And the same way with agents, the agents receive the same thing. It's really difficult for them to decipher who has what, because with a query letter, you're not reading the book. You're just reading a synopsis about the book. Right. And if it doesn't hook them, or it could be that they have a slush pile, maybe they have 200 in that day, and they're just going through and picking out at random two or three, which happens a lot, you're going to get overlooked. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a good book, that you're not a great author. It just means you didn't get that opportunity that some people are fortunate enough to have. It's not unusual to seek out self-publishing. You're seeing more and more of your leading authors on Amazon who are self-published. I think it was 2016 that 53 out of the top 100 best-selling authors on Amazon were self-published. So they actually beat out the traditional publishers when it comes to readership. I wanted to create a site that gives self-published authors a chance. But at the same time, if I was like Amazon's or Barnes & Noble's or even your ebook versions like Draft to Digital, the author is going to get lost in the shuffle again. Because there's 700,000 new titles published, more than that actually, published every year. So you can imagine the competition you're up against. So I thought if we can do a select few authors now, get them started, elevate their presence so that they can bring attention back to the website. We'll do this campaign twice a year. Then we can introduce a few more authors so that as we're going gradually, those authors build a base as well. And in some ways, we're all helping each other in doing that. And that's the premise behind this. As far as selection, as far as who I choose to be on this format, there is no set way of doing it. It's usually by someone like Cynthia referring you, for instance, or someone like Alan Livingston referring someone he knows, or oftentimes it's just people I know firsthand, mostly friends, to be honest, that are authors. But there's nothing specific in mind other than diversity, like what Cynthia had mentioned. I am looking for diversity in that we all have different genres or even diversity in characters. You know, that's very important. So that's the real reason for the people who were selected for the first group went through. This first group will end sometime in July, and then we're going to start it over again in the fall. Hopefully there's a lot to look forward to, and hopefully it brings a lot of attention to the work we're doing. Did you or Cynthia, either one, have any questions about it? I know, Cynthia, you know a lot about this because we've talked in detail about this format.
Well, it's not really a question, but I do want to say that when we sell books through certain outlets, you know, the percentages is for 40 to 60%. And I think with you, it is so amazing because the cut is so minor. I mean, it's $3 a book. I mean, that's just, you know, for shipping, for, you know, publication, and, you know, again, a portion of that to charity. And I think anybody that's dealt with any of the big companies, they know by the time they get their royalty check and they're looking at, okay, I spent how much time doing this and how much time and how much energy for printing and on and on and on, you know, you can rub your two quarters together and go buy yourself a Slurpee, and that's about it.
And I'll be honest with you, Cynthia, I actually took a little bit of knowledge, having known Kevin Tomlinson with Draft to Digital, he's their marketing director, knowing their format and how they got started, really that's what I'm doing here. Just so everyone knows, Draft to Digital is an ebook format. That's all they do right now. You know, they do beta printing, but basically they're ebook. What I'm doing is strictly bound book. That's it. We don't sell ebooks. We don't sell audiobooks. It's strictly hand-printed books to get books back into the hands of the reader so they can enjoy that process. So in that way, we're different than Draft to Digital completely. But at the same time, I kind of am imaging what they did because that company was started by authors. And they did that because the bigger companies, and I can mention them because it's a fact, Amazon gets 40% off the top of their retail sales. Barnes & Noble, if you go into their stores, they get up to a 55% markup on your book. So the authors aren't making as much. And just like Draft to Digital, they wanted to put more of the royalties back into the hands of the authors because they're an author too, and so they know what that's like. And that's kind of the same premise that I had here. If I can just take enough to keep me going, I definitely am giving $1 for every book sold to charity. And then, you know, for advertisement, that has to be done as well. Giving more royalty back to the author, it helps them because it helps you if you have a new project coming up. There's a lot of expense involved to even self-publishing that people don't see. You could literally self-publish on your own if you're a good editor and you're a good graphic artist without any help. You could do it for free. But most of us don't have all the creative knowledge we need to do a cover, to complete the editing process. You know, there's a whole host of things. Even with promotions, sometimes we pay for a little promotions, especially if you go to an event where you have to buy a booth or a table, you know, you're paying for those. That's part of the reason why I wanted to give more money back to the author, because self-published authors don't usually do as well in sales as a traditionally published author. They don't have the machine behind them, the advertisement behind them to push their books. It takes us more time and money to get things going. So by exactly what Cynthia said, by this process, we can give more money back to the authors to keep their projects going in the future. And we are talking about this because we're talking about alternative ways to market your book. Give us some examples of what you've done to market your book up to this point.
First of all, real quick, I am thrilled to be involved in the 1 million books in 100 days because when I first started seeing some of my author friends promote this, I was like, oh, that would be so cool. And I like the excitement behind it. Like, let's do this, you know, in 100 days, let's do this. And then you add the charity layer on top of it. And it's like, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I got to get myself involved in this because it checks all the boxes off, at least for me personally, about why, you know, sharing my work and why I write. Having a little bit more of a royalty come back would be great, obviously, too. But I love the feel of a book in my hand. And, you know, who doesn't remember going to the library? And there's just something about the atmosphere of having that book in your hand. So again, I'm like Cynthia, I'm all about the digital formats that's out there, because what better way to get your work out there than to have lots of options and formats for whatever anybody needs. But I am definitely, I guess, traditional or old fashioned, that I love books, and they're all over my house. I have them stuck in every nook and cranny of my house. And so this is just a real thrilling thing to be involved in. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
As far as marketing, I will be the person that, even though I know we're not supposed to, when you're on these types of things, ever say anything negative about ourselves, but I think they say this in the spirit of helping others maybe who might be listening to learn. I should have probably started my marketing plan at least 6 months before my publish date, you know, my book birthday, because there's a lot to doing it when you are self-published. You have to do it all. Unless, like you said, unless you can, you know, you either have a really good friend in marketing who's willing to do it for, you know, a couple of copies of the book, or you've got some capital behind you to pay for that. You know, it's all on the author to market your book. And so I've been learning every day. I learn something new about how here's an opportunity, or gosh, I wish I would have done that, but I'm going to write it down for the next time I have a book. I find that social media gets me the most attention. I am not an expert at social media, as Cynthia will attest to that, because we've had lots of conversations lately about how to market ourselves or our author friends on social media. But I get a tremendous amount of feedback via my Facebook page. I'm branching out, you know, like a big star into Instagram and Twitter, and feeling pretty good about it. And so I think just making sure that your reader, which you can obviously figure out who your demographic is and sort of, you know, direct your message at them. But where you're at Facebook, I've got friends, families, people who are authors, people who are not authors. I got a whole bunch of different people. And so my message to them is, it's a book for everybody. It was originally, you know, concept wise for middle grade age kids, but you know, everybody that's read it, I mean, I've had little kids, their parents read it to them all the way through to people who are in their 80s. And so that's a message I get back on how to continue to market the book, is just the feedback. There's also a lot of places out there where you can get book reviews and stuff. So I'm just kind of starting to scratch the surface on that. I didn't do any direct emails, but I've had authors tell me that they've had great success with that. So that's probably something to build an email list so I can communicate directly with people. It's on my website, but you've got to promote your website too. So I think I have a lot to learn. Book signings have been fabulous. I've had a lot of feedback from the book signings. And when I have a book signing, I may not sell a lot that day, but I do usually see a little tiny uptick on sales or requests to get like a signed copy from me. So those book signings are key. And then you get to meet your readers, and there's nothing better than that, to have somebody, you know, come up and meet you and get your signature, and then maybe follow back up and tell you how they liked your book, which that's been fabulous. So I think I have a lot to learn. So if you and Cynthia have anything to add to that, obviously I'm sure you do. I do feel like a media plan or a marketing plan or PR plan before you ever even get it published is key. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who will listen that's like, well, yeah, that's probably what would work better for you. So I've learned that.
I want to add something to what you said, because you had mentioned that, you know, that you're always told you shouldn't talk negativity when you're doing a radio show or whatever. But in actuality, that's what this whole show is about. Not negativity, but in the fact that it's a learning process. And the whole reason for this show is to share our experiences so someone else doesn't have to go through that again.
Exactly.
And it doesn't even matter if someone's traditionally published, because a lot of traditional publishers require their first-base publishers to do a lot of their own promoting and go out on the road. So these are lessons that we can share with anyone who's a writer. So that's really important. And I've always been very open about what I did. I'm glad to share what I did. I spent $30,000 on my first book because I didn't know what I was doing. And that's often what happens with novice authors, is that their first venture out, we don't know what to do. And we have a tendency to want to believe anyone who can give us a great sales pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, Cynthia, you went through this as well. I mean, I published 5,000 copies of my first novel. So you can imagine I had to fill my garage up with books. And then in addition to that, I went through various editors. I had one editor I had to pay 3 or 4 times. People will take you to the cleaners if they can.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to know who to trust, who to believe in. That's why you do need to be knowledgeable before you go out there and self-publish. You need to learn as much as you possibly can. Yeah. Find out what you can do that won't cost you an arm and a leg. And probably the hardest thing to do is find someone who can help with your editing. Because how do you know who's a good editor and who isn't, really?
So, yeah, I lucked out with that because I have several friends who have professionally, you know, that's the path, their career path. So although I did pay them because I think their time is definitely valuable and worth it, and they've learned their skill and their craft, I had two really amazing editors that did not just the basics. They did they went through the content with me and found a few little holes in my story. And I mean, it was great, but yeah, you have to plan for that because you get what you pay for, even though there are sources out there and people out there who will offer it for free who are great. And if you can trade things back and forth, maybe you can do something for an editor and they can edit your book or whatever. I say go for it. But in my case, I was really lucky with that. But I was also lucky with knowing an illustrator that was willing to work with me on my cover. That was a home run for me because everybody loves the cover. Such great feedback on that. And that, you know, that cover sells a book sometimes for you, right? But yeah, I stumbled along, and I had a friend tell me a long time ago, you can Google anything. Google it. Google is my friend, but I think you really do have to do trial and error sometimes, unfortunately, but that's how we learn. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I'll share any of my ups and downs with anybody. I'm an open book, no pun intended. I'm happy to share with what didn't work for me, but maybe will work for other people. So,
well, let's ask Cynthia. Cynthia, first of all, give a little bit of your background, and then let's talk about your first book.
Okay. Well, I have 3 out right now, and the first one is Me, Myself, and I, EYE, which is about the realities of living with a prosthetic eye, which I've had since I was 17. And then that led through the talks and different book signings and stuff. Everybody wanted to know how to keep their spirits up. So that led to Freedom from Depression, No Matter What Your Disability May Be. I'm really proud of that one too, because it's a 5-part book, and there's even a section in there for the reader to really understand how important they are and what they have to offer. Because to me, even fear can be debilitating, anything that stops us from living a life we want. And then the third book, I kind of stepped, actually was the first book I ever wrote, which was written 20 years ago. And it's a children's book called Jimmy's Magic Turtle. And it literally took 20 years to find the illustrator that would be as passionate about this work as I was. And we have a lot of connections. And, you know, everybody says, well, when you ask a question, you hope for yes or no, but the hardest one is wait. And that definitely was it with that third book. My first book, I was totally green when it came to that with the Me, Myself, and I, because it is a definite niche market. I sent it out to like 172 ocularists around the country. And for those who don't know, that's a medical artist or someone who creates prosthetic eyes. And I did this on my own. I was connected with a self-publishing company that I paid. My book, again, editing is majorly important. I had my ocularist, my eye doctor, and three other people, including another editor that I paid, you know, besides family and friends, edit this book, because it was so vitally important to me that all the information was correct in that. However, the company that I was dealing with, let's just say that to be a writer, you have to be a little bit crazy and totally passionate about what you're doing, and people feed on that passion.
Yeah.
And they totally take advantage.
Absolutely.
I was told I had to print 2,500 books before Barnes and Noble would take a look at that. And that was not a guarantee.
Wow.
Now, here's the other kicker. These 2,500 books, other than the ones that were sent to me, were stored at either the distribution house or at the publisher, which I had to pay a penny and a half a piece per month for storage.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. To get them shipped to me, 108 books cost me $34 to have shipped. So, yeah, and I have a whole closet full of books. So, you know, as far as learning along the way, oh, yeah, definitely. Because quite honestly, I thought, this is a niche market. There's not many books out there like that. I'm going to send it out to Ocularist. It's just going to fly off the shelves. I'm going to be done. There's not going to be any self-promotion, nothing. This is just going to be magical. You know, I wrote it. They're going to read it. Everything's going to be fine. Well, that was not the case. And through that, I learned, and I actually created a seminar that I did for people, and it was called Purpose and Plan. But there should have been a third P, which is product. And we're the product, not our books.
Right.
We're the product, you know,
that's why
going on with James or any radio show or any kind of advertisement, yes, you're on there to hopefully sell a few books, but you're there to promote yourself. And so again, your purpose for writing your book leads to the plan of who your reader is and how you're going to get it into their hands. And so for me, because my books are, you know, tough reads, except for the final one, it was important for me to go to those specific areas, to talk to Ocularists, to talk to different places. The Facebook is great. And what's really great about Facebook, and a lot of authors haven't tapped into this, is the groups on Facebook. Now, you have to be cautious because you don't want to step on anybody's toes that's actually created a group. But you want to be able to get out there, at least converse with them. I'm connected to Blind in One Eye, Lost Eye, you know, all these kinds of groups that deal with prosthetics and people with vision loss and all that. But there is a group out there for everything.
Yeah.
I also had, you know, epidermoid brain tumors. There's an epidermoid group. There's a this group. There's a that group. Temple and I are involved with the coffee house tours. I know that James was also involved in that. And that is book signings. Again, just like Temple, you know, my books are a hard sell, so I may not sell anything. But again, it's reaching out. It's promoting the product. So I've learned a lot along the way, and I'm still learning. Facebook still, and all of the social media, I still have my glitches on that every day. But, you know, it's just it's a learning process. But I do know that I think when an opportunity presents itself, we have to jump. When you know, James first mentioned this to me, it was like, I didn't even know all about it. It was like, I'm in, you know, I'm in, I know this man, I know he's passionate about what he does. It's going to be a good thing. And that's what you have to do. And quite frankly, you know, I've heard it from numerous authors, anything that you go to do to promote yourself is a crapshoot. It may go over big, it may not. So just, you know, take a leap of faith. And if you're passionate about your book, be passionate about letting people know about it.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on something you just said too about your children's story, Jimmy and the Magic Turtle. And you said it took you 20 years to find an illustrator. Right. I went through the same process. It took me 20 years to find an illustrator for the Purple Caterpillar. And so that's the reason I say that is I don't want authors to ever give up. If you have something you've stuck in a drawer somewhere, go back and revisit that. You know, it may be something that's perfect for the time now. You know, we don't know from day to day what's going to happen. Bring it out of the drawer and type it back up or whatever you have to do in your word processor or in your computer. I started off in the days of word processors. That's why I said that.
I so, started out on a typewriter.
Yeah.
And it wasn't electric.
Well, I was late to the start when it came to actually writing. But yeah, word processor was a huge machine that you used. But anyway, so, you know, bring it out of the drawer and bring it back up, you know, on the computer. I have a novel now. My very first novel, I want to re-release it. I just want to update it and re-release it. When you're self-published, that's the glory of what you do, is you can go out there and market it whenever you want, because now's a better time for it. That's the great thing about what we do. And paying attention to your marketing is important, because like we're talking about with that book, because of the terrorism throughout the world and all the things that have been happening, this might be a subject matter which people would be drawn to right now. And with your books too, Cynthia, your book is timeless anyway, as far as the children's story goes. We never give up. And that's why marketing is important, because if you have one or two books out and they didn't do well and you can market that third book, you pick up a following from that or a fan base, they may go back and get your other books. And as a matter of fact, with this book site, 1 million books in 100 days, there's an author on there who sold a book to someone in Texas. He lives in Las Vegas. And she liked his first book so much that when she saw 1 million books in 100 days on Facebook, she clicked into it, saw him there, that he was part of this program when she looked at the site, and she bought his other two books because she liked his first novel. If you have more than one book, always be thinking ahead and think, don't give up on the first book just because now you've got this new book. Always be marketing everything.
Yeah, it's like a brand. And I catch myself doing that too. I've perused your 1 million books in 100 days site, and Cynthia and I were kind of just talking briefly. There's so much out there. I think not only is that going to introduce me to a whole group of new authors that, you know, I mean, there's just so much out there. You can't know every author, but what a great compilation of good authors that maybe they have more than one book. And so I'm kind of excited just to sit down and go through every single book and author. But I do find myself, like, if I read one book that I really love that sticks with me, I'll go find that author and see if I can, you know, if they have another book. Because I know I'll like it probably because I like their style in the first book I've read.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. I think that's key as well, is one of the things that traditional authors like to do, and I'll get your feedback from both of you on this. When you, let's say I write science fiction. If you write science fiction and a traditional publisher picks you up, they always want you to have another book about ready to go, or at least working on one. And they want it within that same genre. But when you're self-published, you're not pigeonholed. You can go out there and write in many different genres. I write children's stories, government espionage, science fiction. You're not stuck to that one genre. That's really what's really great about being a self-published author, is you have the freedom to express yourself the way you want to.
Yeah, because I think it's really silly whenever people say, well, I'm a this writer, I'm that writer. Well, you know, I get that, but really the majority of authors that I've talked to are not stuck in a single genre. They explore a lot of other things. And usually when you write one book, you know, I kind of go back to any of the arts, because, you know, writing is an art. But if you talk to an artist who paints or an actor or whatever, they don't want to do the same thing. They don't want to paint the same tree. They don't want to play the same bad guy. They want to have, you know, some versatility in what they do. And I think we're the same way. And, you know, we have a lot to discuss. So why not share it as much as we can? And I, for one, really realized, like what James said with the having more than one book out there, it is amazing. You will really start seeing people and they'll start coming around and going, oh, wow, you've got two, or wow, you've got three. And it does give you, I think, a little bit more credence. You know, in Temple's case, she already writes for magazines, so she's got a foothold there. You know, so it's the more you can do and the more you can get out there, You know, a master is somebody that, what, it's 50,000 hours before you can say you're a master at anything?
Yeah, right.
Well, and being an author, I think you at least have to have one or two things out there. In my case, I started in 2013 with a story blog, which was called Stories from an Open Heart. And it wasn't just my stories. It was stories from other people, all different genres, fiction, nonfiction, you name it. And it was just like James said, it got people to send me stuff, get it out of their drawer, and get it out there. We put a picture with it, and that was it. Nobody got paid. I didn't get paid. They didn't get paid, but it was out there. Yeah. And, you know, I've continued that on my website. And that's the other thing that we miss talking about, but every author needs a site.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think just on that point, for as long as I can remember, people say, well, write what you know. I mean, how many times have we heard that, right? Yeah. Well, I know about a lot of stuff, you know, and I love the freedom that was something I worried about. Like if I write a book that is a middle grade book, you know, is that going to, am I stuck there forever? Or if I try to write something else, am I not going to have the, you know, followers to a different genre? And part of me just feels like, you know, I've kind of always been a little bit of a rebel, and my gut instinct told me just write what you know, write what you love, write those things that are tugging at your heartstrings or that are rolling around in your head, or you've written it down like you said and it's in your drawer, pull it out and just, you know, start with that. And that's why I really like the magazine I write for too, is because she's just like, write what you want. And I wasn't really, I'm a fiction writer, but not for magazines. The magazines were always, you know, nonfiction. And she said, why don't you try some fiction? And I thought, oh, you know, it kind of scared me, which was stupid because my book is fiction. And so I'm like, why am I afraid of this? But you know what? It took that leap of faith. And now I feel like I've broadened my horizons and I'm not, you know, stuck in one genre. And at least for my readers, you know, for the magazine articles, they don't know what I'm going to write from issue to issue, which is kind of fun to surprise them, you know? So I just think you write what the heart tells you to write or what your creative spirit tells you to write. And I love that freedom with self-publishing. It really is a treat that you cannot limit yourself that way. Cause I don't know people who are creative that like to be real limited, and not to say anything bad about people who just write in one genre, because there's obviously a lot of writers that do that. I just don't happen to be someone that would want that to be my path. You know, I like to kind of veer off the beaten path a little bit. So.
Well, one of the things you do, Temple, which is great, and they actually say, you know, if you can create a blog or something, and in your case, you write articles, writing for magazines and newspapers, especially if you can add a tagline on the end saying that, you know, I'm the author of the button boxes or whatever else you're working on.
Yeah, she did a great feature. I mean, the cover, my big face, you know, picture of me. An interview format. And so, you know, and she just, I'm sort of, like I said, you know, I don't hide a whole lot because, you know, everybody gets a kick out of it or learns from it. But when I got that issue, I opened it up and there I was, and I cried. I was like, here I am in a magazine because of this wonderful book and this wonderful magazine that's willing to take a risk on me, you know. So it was a great experience. And you're right. Every time, you know, you have an opportunity to say who you are and what you write, I don't think that's wrong at all. I totally agree with that. And my website, I don't know if you have the luck to be able to have the tech, you know, techie brain, which I don't. I used to actually do web work back in the world when we'd had the HTML code.
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier now, but yeah, a website's great because you can put anything out there. You can just direct them there. You can sell your books there, autographed copies. You can, you know, it's sort of like my portfolio. Mm-hmm. I've put out a lot of my magazine articles and stuff there, or links to where the articles can be found. And so it's kind of a great way for a writer to have a portfolio too. If you have a variety of things. And even if you're just starting out, you know, here's stuff that you might write for a blog, or just your thoughts, you know, you can put your writing out there and share it with anybody.
I agree.
That's what's great about today. With marketing today, it's so much easier. When my novel came out, my first novel came out in 1995, and we didn't have the platforms that you have today to go out there and market online. It was completely up to you to go out there and set up book signings, or, you know, do lectures or whatever you had to do to sell your book. I think in some ways, I probably should pay more attention to what I did in the past, because oftentimes we're afraid today to go and call someone or knock on a door and say, you know, can I do a signing here? Or would you be willing? Which is what's great about the coffee house tours, by the way. Whereas when I started out, I had to go and plead to get my book in a store, because I didn't have a distributor. I distributed my own books. Once it was printed, it was up to you to go get those books in the store. What I did is I would go into the store and hand the book to whoever the buyer was, or the marketing director, and leave it at that and hope they liked it. And then they would call me back and say, you know, bring us a few copies, let's try it out. I landed in a chain of bookstores in Atlanta, Georgia. It was the first bookstore chain I was ever in. And it was strictly by just going up to the store, saying, who's your marketing director? They told me who the marketing director was. I went to their corporate office and I said, I would like to see if you could possibly carry my book. I dropped off a copy, they liked it, and that's how that happened. Oftentimes when something like that happens, though, you think it's this easy all the time, but it is not. But you always keep trying to knock on doors, try to open up, you know, new ways of presenting yourself and your book. Because Cynthia hit on something that's very key. You're not just promoting the book, you're promoting yourself as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're selling that book, and your cover and your synopsis will only do so much. It's up to you to go out there and help that speed that process along, you know, or help that process.
Yeah, I've tried a few places, you know, where I've just gone in and asked for the owner or the manager, and I've had really good luck. And I think part of that is like what Cynthia said, you know, they see me, they talk to me. I'm a real human. I'm not just an email or a picture on a website. I'm actually standing there, and they get to know a little bit about me. And so it makes them comfortable to say, yeah, I'll read your book and let you know. So it is scary to do that, though.
Yes, but, it is.
And I find I'm a little bit of a hermit, I guess, sometimes, because I like to do the technical side of it. Like, oh, I'll just do some social media and I'll do that, you know. But getting out there really is important. And I've had pretty good luck with it, but I don't think you can ever do enough. So I'm lucky I have some options here in Vegas, but then I have great connections in where I grew up in Idaho, and I've had some retailers say, yeah, we'll take your book. But even some of them who had never met me, you know, I went in and shook their hand and said, back when we could shake hands, and said, here's my book. And it's true. That is a really important point to bring up. I don't know if, you know, if that's necessarily the top of the list on people making a marketing plan for their book or their writing. So I think that's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah. It truly is. And the other thing too is when I talk to people, I don't know how many times people walk up to me, well, I want to write a book. Well, I want to write a book. Well, mm-hmm. I want to write a book.
Yeah.
But the thing is that as authors, we do have a little bit of notoriety because we've actually done it.
Yes.
So a lot of people want to go, okay, yeah, I know this author, and you know, she does this or she does that, and I have her book here, and she, you know, she signed all these copies for me. So it's a lot about, you know, not to, you have to toot your own horn at times, but it is true that a lot of people will go, well, yeah, you know, I really want to do that. How did you do that? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it would be the same for me if somebody said, you know, that they constantly jumped out of airplanes. I'd be, how do you do that?
You know? I wouldn't want to do that.
No, that's definitely
I'll write about
not,
it, but I don't want to do it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Let me just write about it. Yeah.
Exactly. Not on my bucket list. So again, you know, having that, you know, that we've done it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you're local. A lot of that is your local. As far as you go, I mean, button boxes and small little stores that actually, you know, have fabrics or whatever. Even on consignment, I mean, it doesn't hurt. Yeah, you're not going to get a lot for it, But I'll tell you what, I've seen a lot of moms be dragging their kids in, looking for the perfect shade of green to go with this or that, as far as fabric goes.
Yeah.
The kid is bored to tears where, you know, your book was there. There you go. Perfect opportunity.
Yes.
So it's finding those things that actually connect with our books. I do have some, you know, more ideas for where I want to go. To me, it's any place that would sell, you know, wheelchairs or rent wheelchairs or any type of assistant devices for people. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we all have something going on and some kind of invisible disability for some and some that are very noticeable. But again, it's reaching out, helping people, enriching their life.
Yeah.
Either by entertaining them, giving them some kind of knowledge that they can use, something along those lines. And your elevator pitch is really, really important.
Oh. That, and also knowing your market. Like you just said, you know, your first book is about prosthetics. So you need to be focused on that. And it doesn't even have to be just the eye, because the experience alone is what you write about. But you got to know who your market is too, you know, who you're marketing to, who your audience is. That's important when you go out there to start marketing your book. You know, you have to know all of that. And that's not always easy, because I write science fiction, and my first book was government espionage, as I said, and that's what I meant to say. When it came out, I wrote about something that wasn't happening in our country, you know, on a regular basis. And so I didn't know how to market the book. I thought, how am I going to sell people on this terrorist that's causing havoc throughout the United States? It was another author, actually a famous author, who gave me direction and said, just go out there and do lectures, maybe on self-publishing, and maybe that'll bring attention to you and what you're doing, and that'll help create an audience. And what you find is, if you go out there and do lectures or you do seminars or something like that, then people feel obligated to buy your book, which sounds horrible, but they do. You know, they feel like, okay, well, if I'm going to listen to this lecture for free, I probably should at least buy their book. So technically you're not doing it for free, because now they're buying your book. So, you know, it's a good gimmick if you can do it. And a lot of the bookstores don't like authors to come in and do a speech or a lecture or any type of seminar before a signing. But I think they're making a mistake, because if an author's pretty good at what they do, they could find some way of selling that book and more for the store if, you know, they can get people to come in for a lecture. But anyway, you know, that's the way stores are today. So I don't know.
Yeah, I got lucky. A friend of mine got me connected with a middle school teacher here in town. And so I was lucky enough to go talk to some middle school aged kids. And I'm telling you, I don't know if anybody went home and said, Mom, I want this book. But it was sure fulfilling for me. And everybody got a bookmark. And it was, you know, so, and that was my audience right there, right in front of me. And I saw a lot of eager kids and a lot of bright faces and a lot of hands went up in the air to ask questions. And, you know, a couple of them were like, and I'm writing this book and I'm writing that book. And I'm just, it was just amazing. So, you know, again, you never know who's listening and who's out there. I don't know if that would ever, like, I don't know how I would ever track, like, this school visit resulted in this, but just the self-satisfaction is enough. I mean, just seeing those kids wanted to learn a little bit more about writing and, you know, the importance of reading and writing and how they go together. That was sort of, you know, what we talked about. And so I would love to do those types of things any chance I can get.
And one of the things you just said is important too, is having cards. I had an air conditioner put in this morning at my home, and I'm out there handing out my cards to the neighbors who are looking to see what's going on and to the people putting the air conditioner in. I mean, you know, don't pass up any opportunity. I don't care who it is. Listen, we're down to the last minute of the show. So Temple, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today. And your book is Button Boxes. And that can be found on 1millionbooks100days.com, as well as other outlets. And then Cynthia, she's our co-host for today. Her books are also available on 1millionbooksin100days.com. You can actually find a few of my books on there. Until next week, this is your host, James Kelly, reminding you, if you can dream it, you can write it. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Aspects of Writing. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss every aspect of the writing industry. Until then, if you can dream it, you can write it.